Today's episode is brought to you by the Vegas Beer Guys. The Everything Sequel podcast contains explicit language. 'Cause we learned it from you, Dad! Hello and welcome to the Everything Sequel podcast. This is a Jurassic Park edition. Today, we're ranking Jurassic Parks and Jurassic Parks only. My name is Michael Shantz of the How Dare You Awards. Joining me, the man trying to dig my bones up out of the ground, Tom Stewart of Lonesome Whistle Productions. Hit me, Tom.
Oh, yeah. Ooh, ah, that's how it always starts. And then later there's running and screaming.
You can see the machinations of a Jeff Goldblum when he talks to Conan O'Brien at certain points in this movie.
It's so funny you say that because I was really struck by, two different aspects of Jeff Goldblum's performance in Lost World, Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
The first being that they've clearly toned down the Ian Malcolm character.
Yes.
so that he can be the lead of the movie rather than a colorful supporting character.
What they seem to say as palatable to me.
Right. Yeah. They've stripped all the Lou Reed from him.
Yeah.
But Jeff Goldblum as an actor is definitely on the first steps of his journey towards the deranged ASL interpreter that we know him to be today, exhibited by Conan interviews that you're talking about. And that's really interesting to contrast against Sam Neill, who, as he does in the original Jurassic Park, plays the lead of the movie
straight down the middle. Yeah.
And so... It's interesting which kind of legacy character they go with for each movie and how that affects the movie.
Mm-hmm. I agree completely. and in turn, that makes these movies a fascinating watch to me.
I completely agree.
And spoiler alert, I also watched the original before I watched the two sequels.
Well, that was silly.
Just because in my head of what I remember about the sequels, I was like, well, I'd like to be happy before I'm a little sad. So why don't we?
Well, there's a remarkable.
And that's not to say there's not things to like in these movies, because there are.
There's also,
there's
remarkable continuity compared to what
we usually deal with. Yeah, that's true.
I mean, more in the representations of the dinosaurs and their character development than the development of the human characters.
Yes.
But it's interesting to see how they triple down on everything about, say, the velociraptors. Mm-hmm. To the point where, by the end of Jurassic Park 3, they are basically speaking people.
Right. Absolutely. They have dialogue almost.
They have dialogue in Jurassic Park 3. And I like the idea that you could do an edit of these movies, which is just the dinosaurs, and it would feel very cohesive in a way that the movies as a whole do not.
Right. Well, here we are. We're here to rank and declare for just the two Jurassic Park sequels. We'll deal with The Lost World some other day.
You mean Jurassic World?
We are dealing with the Lost World. Jurassic World, yeah.
And of course we mean The Lost World, : Jurassic Park, not...
Boy, do I have a lot to say about that title.
Not Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's The Lost World, which shares similarities with the novel, Michael Crichton's The Lost World, and the movie The Lost World, :
Well, and that's one of the things I found fascinating watching this movie. I mean, I totally forgot that. I just thought it was called The Lost World. So to get onto Netflix and see The Lost World, : Jurassic Park, which is the complete opposite of how titles usually go.
Exactly. Not even Jurassic Park,
: The Lost World.
The Lost World.
Which makes way
Jurassic
more
Park
sense.
Is the subtitle of its own movie.
Yes, exactly. But that's one of my notes for the movie, is that I don't think that movie exactly knows how to reconcile all its source material, because it's drawing from too many things. It's drawing from its own inventions. It's drawing from the book that Michael Crichton wrote. Mm-hmm. But it's also drawing from the first book that he wrote.
Yes.
Because clearly there's stuff that they really would have loved to have gotten to, but excised mm-hmm. for a reason, you know, so that Jurassic Park could be good, and then put it into this movie.
And it's also pulling from the whims of Steven Spielberg.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because the third act of the movie was entirely Spielberg's invention.
Yes.
Which, by his own admission, he plainly evident on a whim.
Yeah.
So it also matters that, you know, you have a director who wants to put his stamp on a sequel.
And boy, did he.
You know, one of these movies is directed by Steven Spielberg. The other's directed by Joe Johnston, who is Spielberg
a disciple.
Light.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, was sort of. Yeah, he's Spielberg's protege, and as Kathleen Kennedy tells it, which means it's not necessarily true, Joe Johnston said, "Can I do The Lost World?" And Spielberg said, "I'm doing The Lost World, but if we make a third one, you can do it."
Yeah, because he was slated for The Lost World, as I understood it, and Steven Spielberg said, "No, I'm going to do that one."
Yeah.
And one of the reasons he wanted to do The Lost World was because he never liked the road untraveled by himself for the Jaws series, as I understand it.
You know, the more I hear Spielberg talk about his own movies, the more I admire him.
Is that right?
I mean, we talked about, well, when we did the Indiana Jones series, I talked about how, you know, refreshingly candid he is in behind the scenes interviews.
Yeah.
Right. Talking about his own work. And that was in comparison to what we'd seen from George Lucas. But it's really a contrast to virtually any other director I can think of. They're the least authorities on pretty much their own work.
Yeah, you know, I agree. I was thinking of that too. Yeah.
Like a Quentin Tarantino, you know, you kind of, I remember when Once Upon a Time in Hollywood came out, and I come up with my own rationalization of why the Bruce Lee scene wasn't racist.
Mm-hmm.
And then he went out in a bunch of interviews and basically doubled down on why it was racist and how that was okay. Because he's Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah, right.
And Bruce Lee was arrogant, therefore I can make as much fun of him as I want. And I was like, no, no, it's a white man's fantasy of defeating Bruce Lee. It's all a dream. Everyone got the wrong end of the stick. And I'm like, oh, I guess that's not what Tarantino intended. But it's so interesting. There's a behind-the-scenes making of featurette for The Lost World that I watched. It's only about 15 minutes long from Universal All Access on YouTube.
Mm.
And it's really, really fascinating to hear Spielberg talk about his attitude to sequels, because he gets into it and he doesn't really hold back. He sort of said, you know, Lost World isn't as good as Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
And he said, part of that is my fault. And then the other part of that is, I don't know if a sequel can ever be as good as the original. And
interesting. Well,
we'll get to it when we get there, but he talks about a specific scene in Lost World, colon Jurassic Park, and he makes observations that we make all the time, and he articulates it as we have articulated it on this podcast.
Oh, okay.
So it's interesting to note that as a director going into the sequel, understanding the pitfalls of sequels, and also understanding the storytelling logic of them.
Yeah.
And this is a guy who seldom does sequels, and he claims right. in that behind-the-scenes interview that this is his only pure sequel. The Indiana Jones films, he says, you know, that's a reset.
Serialized, or, yeah.
Yeah, it's like a, you know, it's a reset event, which is interesting in itself, because we've said that many times as well.
Sure.
And he's happy to admit it as well. I think he's at, virtually any other director, he's a useful voice in his own film criticism.
Yeah, right.
And especially when it comes to sequels.
Well, I'm fascinated now. You gotta tell me when you find these things so I can watch them too. How dare you? How dare you, sir?
It's on a whim, and it's always, you know, it's always 50-50 whether that this material is going to be available. Usually when it's Spielberg, there's something out there.
Sure.
Because I get the sense he doesn't mind dishing the dirt on his own movies. And these are always, he's always noticeably grayer in these interviews, which suggests to me that he's had a little bit of time to reflect on
yeah.
the successes and failures, and is able to evaluate it more fairly than he would be, you know, whenever you see him on set, he's so animated and dynamic. He's clearly into whatever he's doing while he's
sure,
doing it.
Sure, right, right.
But a few years outside of that, and he can go, you know, that maybe that wasn't so great.
Yeah. I'm starting to wonder if Steven Spielberg has a specific therapist with, like, lots of movie knowledge who he just talks to about movies. You know, and he can talk through what he thinks about what he did in the past after a few years, you know, kind of reflection, yeah. you know?
Maybe that, yeah, maybe that's it. I mean, it's a joy to also watch him direct people in the footage we have of him doing that, because you get a sense he's able to explain what's going on in the movie better than, well, again, we've got the low bar of George Lucas, faster, more intense. Don't make me go outside and I'll be happy.
Right.
But, and so it is a low bar, but in that featurette, there's great footage of him directing Jeff Goldblum, and he asked Jeff Goldblum to name a linebacker for whatever, you know, bit of direction he's trying to convey to him. And Jeff Goldblum names, like, a linebacker from the 1950s. And so he's like, he goes to a, then he turns to a crew member, and then he's like, someone a bit more contemporary. So there's a sense that, you know, he's nice about it as well, but he's able to, like, explain, I guess this is why he works so well with children, because he can explain
well, and I think
what's happening. Yeah. At a level that even children can understand.
Well, because he quite famously just talks to his actors while filming them.
Yeah.
You're doing this. You're feeling like this. Yeah. Do this, do this, do this. I
No, you're not that upset.
Yeah, exactly. I remember a specific story about... So, you know, and you see that when he's working with, you know, the kids from E.T.
Yeah.
But I remember a specific story about Liam Neeson during the filming of Schindler's List, thinking, I'm a fucking professional actor. I don't want this in my life right now. And it was Ben Kingsley that said, just relax. Just accept this as the process. It'll be fine. And he did, you know? So
Ben Kingsley, of all people.
Yeah, about how he works with actors and what he's able to get out of them.
If you'd have asked me to guess which of those two actors reacted that way, I would have flip
been the opposite. Yeah. Well, here we are. We have to rank and declare for these two films. Interesting within itself, because I think there's a narrative for the front half of this series, not including Jurassic World.
Sure.
And obviously I think people think of Jurassic Park as far distancing its sequels. But then each of these sequels have its own sort of myth and mythology.
Yeah.
About how, you know, how they are regarded as sequels. And some of it I think is fair and some of it I think is unfair. So
agreed. Yeah.
You know, when we're taking on our task with ranking and declaring, I do think it makes it an interesting, you know, study for the two of us.
Definitely. This is a rather hard call, I think, ranking these movies.
I do, yeah.
It was harder than I
thought it was going to be.
You've got two movies, one of which I think is solidly average throughout, and then another which is full of highs and lows. So they kind of balance out overall.
Mm-hmm.
You've got, two directors, both of which are extremely competent.
Yeah.
One of which who's certainly capable of more artistry than the other, but they're equally technically accomplished. And then you've got the casts of both films. You know, there's some great performances in both movies.
Yeah, there's not a lot of slouches.
No.
As far as actors go, you know what I mean?
So I don't really know, again, what do you value? What do you value more? Because they're equally problematic, but they reach kind of the same level of filmmaking in totally different ways.
Yeah. I think overall I agree with you. I think, you know, I think we've talked about this before with Steven Spielberg. You know, it's that sense of, because we talked about it with the Indiana Jones series, because the last movie wasn't directed by him. And
yeah,
I think we talked about what you expect from a Steven Spielberg movie. And when you don't get it, you're a bit more disappointed because you probably feel like you deserve more.
Especially from Joe Johnston, right? It's sort of because he is Spielberg's protege, and he's kind of inserted himself into that role as a surrogate Spielberg in other movies and other series, like the Young Indiana Jones series. You know, he directed a lot of that, which is essentially doing the same as he's doing for Jurassic Park 3, walking in Spielberg's footsteps. But when it comes to sequel filmmaking, Spielberg's definitely got a type, right? I mean, the guy's only made, what, 4 sequels in his entire career?
Mm-hmm.
And they're all very similar. And, you know, that's the auteur theory writ large. You know, it's like, doesn't matter what kind of a movie you're doing, but you're putting your stamp on it. And this is not about quality. I think it's more about the treatment of certain themes.
Mm.
And I was
well, it's plainly evident how
I was
important
how much Spielbergian themes were in The Lost World.
Yeah, me too. It seemed to me it was clearly evident the themes that Spielberg cares about, because they're literally kind of shoehorned into that sequel.
Totally. Yeah.
You know, like the plot I'm of getting the Last in, Crusade I'm getting is, what yeah. I care about in this sequel, come hell or high water.
Yeah, exactly. He sort of crowbarred the plot of The Last Crusade into a movie about, you know, a dinosaur rescue mission.
Yeah. And I'll say this overall for the series, as certainly the front half of the series, this series seems to have a compulsion that says there's no way a Jurassic Park film can be interesting unless children are in danger.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. But what kind of danger and what kind of children?
Yes.
Because I got a lot to say about how these children progressively turn into superheroes as the
movies. Oh, man, that's what...
Go on.
Yeah. I mean... Well, we'll get there, but I have lots to say on that subject. But
and I think it's interesting because Joe Johnston is kind of reproducing the surface of Spielberg's films, but you need Spielberg to get that thematic depth.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of allusions to Spielberg's movies in Jurassic Park 3, but they're all very surface level.
Well, and I think it's also important to note that this is early on, in his directorial catalog.
Yeah.
You know, by the, mm-hmm. you know, he gets some prestige movies later on. He directs the first Captain America. He directs The Wolfman.
Yeah.
With Benicio del Toro.
Yeah, he's still in his Jumanji phase.
Right.
That's not a knock at all.
Yeah.
But it's a lot, the Jurassic Park 3 is a lot like Jumanji.
It is, yeah.
More so than it is Jurassic Park, I think.
Right.
It's Jumanji Park. But having said that, were you not watching Jurassic Park 3 thinking, I really wish that Joe Johnston would have done the same for the Indiana Jones series and just take it over for Dial of Destiny? I mean, he's shown he can make a modern day blockbuster with the Captain America movie.
Right.
So it's not that outlandish to think that a studio.
Plus, there's already an existing relationship. So
exactly.
You know, it does
that
make sense.
The studio could give him power over Dial of Destiny instead of, you know, handing it to a guy with less of a track record of making
bigger
studio movies. Except because one even that everyone always quotes, but
yeah, even Logan, even Logan for a kind of big kind of Marvel type movie, it's smaller, it's more contained.
Yeah,
you know.
Plus, looking at the running time in Jurassic Park 3, he would have got it done in about half the time that Mangold did.
It's one of my big notes. And then the movie stops.
Most of my notes are, you know, this seems a little simplistic. However, it's a 90-minute movie, so I guess they have no choice.
Yeah, right.
And in the end, isn't it more important that they make a 90-minute movie? And the answer is yes.
Absolutely. Well, does your top on the list, I mean, is it by a hair? Is it, you know, just squeaking by, or...
Yeah, it's not running away. It's not running away with the title. Uh-huh. I'd definitely say that. I think in the end, it's like it comes down to that little bit of exceptionalism that a certain director gives you.
Hmm. I think you've given us an insight.
I think I have. Yeah, but in other ways, like again, you know, I think I picked the more problematic of the two movies as the top of my list. But in recognition that when it works better than the other movie, but the other movie can consistently deliver in a way that this one can't. What about you?
Well, I found myself more interested in and more pleased by the other movie.
See, that was my instinct going into it, for sure.
The failures that are in that movie are writ large upon that movie. Mm. The things that are bad about that movie are laugh-out-loud hysterical.
Yeah, punishing.
In moments. Punishing,
they're
yes.
Punishingly bad, yes. Yeah. I agree.
But when you isolate those... and kind of remove them from the equation, you have a workmanlike picture that overall, I think, works better than the other movie.
Mm.
I think it kind of goes to what I was saying before about... I feel like we're trying to dance around it, but at any rate,
I think it's
plainly obvious
where we go, yeah. Where we're going. So
you're a lost world man, and I am a three man.
I got to correct you there. It is not Jurassic Park 3. It is Jurassic Park //.
Yes, that's. I can't wait to get to that opening title card.
Both titles are
so exciting.
Problematic.
So exciting. Yeah.
That's exactly where we're at.
Yeah. And I guess for me, it kind of goes back to what I had said before about The Lost World. And The Lost World is drawing from too many things. And it feels disjointed and kind of incoherent as a film, even though
it is.
You know, it's easy to follow. It's not like it doesn't make sense, but there are things in it that do not make sense. If that makes any sense.
There are choices that don't make sense.
In and of itself. Yeah, absolutely.
And I haven't read the Lost World novel, by which I mean the Michael Crichton. Yeah. Have you?
Yeah.
Is it as RV heavy as I am led to believe?
No, that's the thing, because I only read it once. But so much of this film is invention that it, you know who's in, you know what character is in The Lost World? Dodgson. The Wayne Knight.
Oh.
Meetup guy. Dodgson. We got Dodgson here.
Well,
that guy is a main character. There are kids in it, as I remember. Certainly not Malcolm's kid.
Well, I didn't expect that was the case. I didn't think
and
that she was.
I'm sure you knew that.
Organic to the. I didn't think she was organic to the premise.
So yeah, it's it's a completely different thing, the book from the movie, and it feels paper thin. Adaption of that book.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah.
But But isn't that a good thing for a literary adaptation, to be paper thin? The only isn't that the only medium where you can actually get away with being paper thin?
Well, that's the thing. Well, you know, when you're adapting a book, you're always constantly, there's that push and that pull of fan service to the fans who read the book.
And it was a huge hit. I mean, it was the top of the bestseller charts for a very long time.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But that movie made a ton of money too. I mean, think about
said it wasn't as good, but it was successful.
Yeah.
He literally says that. It wasn't as good, but it was successful, and then a big smile goes across his face.
Yeah.
And his teeth turn into dollar signs.
He's smart in that way. Yeah, you know, he knows because of the massive hit that Jurassic Park was, you know, he could do almost anything and people are going to come to that movie. And you might see it more than once, even if you didn't like it. Because if you see it the first time and you don't like it, you can convince yourself, no, it wasn't that bad. Like, I have to go back and just sort of reevaluate it. Mm. And you come back, maybe you hate it again or maybe you don't. But I think that's part of it, of the success, is that even if you don't like that film, you might have paid to see it twice in the theater.
I certainly think there are scenes in the movie that I would pay to see twice.
Yeah, I agree. And that was the thing that made it really hard for me on my ranking. Because there's a couple of, you know, spectacular moments.
And, you know, you have the benefit these days of a skip button.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Which makes it easier to re-digest and just kind of, you know, get to the best bits.
Okay.
But I suppose in the end, what my decision comes down to is less... I overall agree. I think Jurassic Park 3 is far more consistent and the premise far more sustainable than Lost World. But Lost World has the edge. There are just moments where you can see that Joe Johnston can't think that extra step further that Spielberg can about cinema.
Yes, I agree.
But again, it's momentary. That, you know, it's kind of thinly spread across the movie. There are just moments here and there where you just feel like this is a director working on another level.
Mm-hmm.
I admire that, you know, he's not only a bit, you know, a blockbuster movie, but a sequel to a blockbuster movie, but he's still taking the time and care to do auteurish things. And I love the idea that he just threw away the end of the movie and made everyone basically turn it into an entirely different movie for the last 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And it's almost like, you know, once you get into that part of the movie, you see Spielberg's having way more fun. He's let loose. He's more assured in what he's doing than in any other part of the movie. And it starts to make sense as the concept almost seems to be, it feels like it's drawing towards that point, but in reality, it could not be because they had a totally different ending
right.
But they threw out and put this in.
The other part for me is that I cannot discount the fact that it also it makes the film disjointed because it doesn't feel like these two things are part of the same movie.
Yeah,
and
although I like his auteurism, I also
think that there are missteps as a director, and I can't separate, you know, that without I have to take it into account.
There are missteps, sure. They don't bother me as much as missteps in other Spielberg movies, though, which is kind of strange.
See, that's funny, because they bothered me a lot in this movie.
Maybe that you have a higher respect for him overall.
The first day I saw it, I remember thinking, why?
1997 sequels, they sounds like there was just a punch in the gut for you, because you've also got Speed 2 Cruise Control, which, by the way, shares a lot of similarities. It's like almost one scene in the movie saves the whole thing. And it's the same kind of scene. They both involve boats running into harbors.
Yeah, right. Don't think I didn't think of it.
Which is fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah. But what it feels like it was a really depressing time in your cinematic
in
life.
In my cinematic, yeah, maybe.
Cause, yeah.
It's, I haven't thought too much about it, but...
And there are, I guess there are two outside factors that make me less concerned about the missteps. One is that I don't hold Jurassic Park in particularly high regard.
Mm.
Like it's a fun movie that I'm happy to watch, but I don't I don't understand my generation's putting it on the pedestal it does. And second of all, you know, I pretty much feel the same way about Spielberg, that like, oh yes, he's made some great movies, but his career as a whole is not the oeuvre that people say it is.
And yeah.
That allows me to sort of see something like The Lost World and go, oh, I like what he tried here. I like the fact that rather than settling for a bland ending, they went for something totally out of left field. It frees me up to sort of see the good in it, where others just want to detract because it's their it's their favorite director of all time and one of their favorite movies of all time.
Yeah, right? Now I don't have that. Now
I'm
fascinated by this conversation because I am the complete opposite. When I watch Jurassic Park, I am watching a director in complete and total control. Every shot to me is masterful.
Mm-hmm.
Because I just rewatched it. You know, I'm watching Wayne Knight go in and steal all of the dinosaur stuff to put into the Barbasol can. The way it's shot, the way it's edited, the way it's paced, everything about it is perfect. And The Lost World, too much of The Lost World to me feels clunky. And so
lot of Jurassic Park is clunky too.
Oh, I disagree.
When you break it down.
I disagree.
Hmm.
Yeah, but it's funny to me.
It's more
that
of a lateral move.
My overall kind of general love that we've talked about in the past for Spielberg as the director I kind of grew up with, all seems to be channeled into Jurassic Park.
And it is for lots of people.
You're finding a lot to like in a movie where I think he failed me.
Yeah,
quite a bit.
I think that's interesting. I think that's what we're coming to. And it's especially weird because I remember, you know, begging my parents to go and see Jurassic. I mean, we can save this conversation for when we do it on the Patreon. But I begged my parents to take me to see Jurassic Park on the day it opened. So it should hold a greater significance for me than it does. But I guess there was also, we did it in film school as well. And there was that kind of deconstruction where a lot of what Spielberg was doing suddenly seemed laughable in a way it hadn't before. And I never saw Lost World in the theater.
What's the matter with you?
I've seen it on TV. I don't know. It just seemed like a foregone conclusion. It's like, yeah, there will be a sequel and it probably won't be very good.
Mm-hmm.
And both of those things were kind of true, but... I gotta say, by both another thing that makes it hard to rank both of these movies is that these are movies that I would happily put on in the middle of an afternoon and fall asleep to on the couch.
Sure,
put them on back to back.
Absolutely,
and then wake up when the pterodactyls are flying into the clouds and be like, "All right, bedtime." sounds like a good afternoon to me. So that also makes it harder for me to sort of, you know, it's like what Chris Rock says about Louis Farrakhan and the Jews. He's like, I don't have time to break white people down into groups. I kind of feel the same about the Jurassic Park movies. I'm like, I don't have time to break it down into each individual film. I'll put it on in the middle of the afternoon and fall asleep
and go to bed.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, that's one of the things that I found really interesting watching these, you know, watching these two movies for our purposes, for the purposes of the podcast, having to pay way more attention to them than I've ever had to or wanted to in the past.
Yeah.
You know, and in the end, I appreciated one movie's effort more.
Which is Jurassic Park /...
Correct. Don't diminish it by saying /...
I'm okay? I'm not diminishing it. That's the way the title is introduced to me. So that, why would I?
You're diminishing my choice. I know what you're doing.
I'm not. No, I'm not. And I don't want to diminish that movie either. I think it's a typical third movie in a trilogy, but no worse for that.
Mm-hmm.
It's, like I said, technically accomplished, structurally much better than Lost World.
I think what's fascinating
It's
tighter, yeah. Well, I think what's fascinating about that movie is that it has this feel of being less than, despite the fact that they clearly are putting so much effort into... specifically the Spinosaurus.
Yeah.
You know, they created this like 24,000 pound puppet with hydraulics head to toe and all the body except the legs, you know? That's, I can't even begin to imagine like building that thing and then somebody saying, wait a second, how long's this movie? Oh, 90 minutes. You know, like it just doesn't feel worthy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Michael Gita, who plays the one of the mercenary not mercenary characters in the movie. They're like the Z team.
They all die right? first.
They're definitely not the A team. They're definitely Z team. Which is hilarious. Hilarious for a sequel in and of itself. But he said that, you know, when first day working with the Spinosaurus puppet, the first thing Stan Winston said to me, it's like, you're going to hear the word puppet and you're going to think you're safe. This can kill you.
Yeah. And I was reading that there was a moment, a specific shot they wanted of that plane crashing in the tree and a moment where the second it stopped and the Spinosaurus kind of biting, and they wanted it all kind of in one motion, one take.
Yeah.
And they only had four planes. So the guy in charge of the Spinosaurus and the biting, you know, the first two just didn't work. They all kind of stopped for a second. They're all, you know, Stan Winston is there. He's talking to Joe Johnston. They're like, we only got two tries. And if you, one of those things was that specific concern. Don't get overzealous because you can kill one of those actors in that,
in
that plane. Yeah. And Stan Winston apparently just kind of looked over at the guy in charge, gave him a little nod, like, don't worry about it. You can do this. And they got it on the next take. But that idea of how quickly that the hydraulics in that particular puppet were all brand new, you know, state of the art. In a way where it could turn its head on such a dime so quickly, it could kill you. And it, in fact, killed the T-Rex.
I was just going to say the same thing, yeah.
Yeah.
That, like, what happens on screen happened behind the scenes as well. One machine broke the other.
Right.
It's so interesting, like, at the time of the original Jurassic Park, all the emphasis was on the digital effects and the transition to digital that heralded.
Sure.
But the legacy of these movies is what was done
practically
with animatronics.
Yeah.
Yeah. And sure, some of that is about how seamlessly digital and practical are integrated in these movies, and the legacy of that you can see in the Star Wars sequels, which, you know, you can't tell what's a puppet and what's a digital effect anymore, which is, you know, one of the
what you want.
Reasons those... Yeah, one of the only reasons that those movies deserve to exist. But it's just so interesting, like the discourse. I mean, I don't know if the discourse has changed, but the digital effects are the least interesting thing about, I would say, even the original version of this movie, but definitely in the sequels. The only thing that wows you is the animatronics.
Yeah.
And that's in both movies. And that's because they're steadily experimenting and challenging themselves.
Sure.
In a way that is just And it's almost like they get lazy with the digital effects almost instantly. And they're like, oh, we,
Because there are a lot, there's a lot of times in both these sequels where you think, this should look a little bit better digitally.
Yeah.
It looks like a composite. Yeah. It looks, you know.
It's so, some of it's so blurry.
Yeah, exactly.
I can't believe we ever tolerated that level of blurriness.
Yeah, I agree. I agree completely.
And then any time you get to a Stan Winston puppet, you're like, I mean, that's the most incredible
amazing thing I've ever seen in my life. Exactly.
But then I guess there are digital effects that are kind of, you know, going under the radar as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, the people who made it would be like, fuck you. You didn't notice the stuff that worked.
Sure.
So it's your problem watching it. But there are other times where it's just the digital effects and you're like, these looks like outtakes from The Phantom Menace. This is not good.
I agree. Well, it appears we have our ranking.
We do.
I'm 3-2, you're 2-3.
Yeah. You really, if you were a betting person, you would have totally gone the other way on this one.
You think?
Yeah, because so it was like is Mike going to pick a Spielberg movie?
Yeah, and is Tom.
And is Tom going to pick the third in a trilogy?
That's true. Yeah.
So I hope you've all won a lot of money right now.
The sports book.
If you made that outside bet.
Some lowly casino sports book in Las Vegas, way down at the bottom of the list, says Mike and Tom. Who will pick what?
And I haven't even mentioned James Bond yet.
Well, I disagree.
What, on this episode? Oh, just then? Yeah, obviously. But I was making the point that I hadn't mentioned it. Except that Sam Neill did a screen test for James Bond. And on the evidence of his performance in Jurassic Park ... he could have easily done what Pierce Brosnan did without any noticeable difference.
No problem. All right, so the only thing left to discuss are
this should be interesting.
Are either of these movies good?
Oh, well, there's a bit of a pejorative tone there in phrasing the question.
I think both of the I'm only saying that because I think both of these sequels are famously derided.
Both of them?
I think so.
Huh.
The overall narrative for The Lost World was disappointing.
Right.
And the overall narrative...
That comes from Spielberg himself.
Himself.
Who are we to disagree?
The overall narrative for Jurassic Park ... is terrible. And even,
really?
Yeah. And Sam Neill himself has often said, I think people should revisit that movie.
Yeah.
Because I think it's a way better movie than people give it credit for.
Well, he's in the making of featurette, talking in glowing terms. I mean, he's right in the middle of it because he has like fake bruises on his face.
Uh-huh.
Unless, you know, this is years after and someone has punched him into submission, so he did a featurette. But I suspect he's like in the middle of filming, and he sort of says, you know, you can't, this subject matter, you can't really get enough of it.
Mm.
There's a lot that really surprises me, because Jurassic Park 3 is solid, and I don't know, the fact that there are any Spielbergian touches in Lost World is a testament to, if you love Spielberg, then that surely is a testament to what you love about him.
Yeah.
That he can do something with movies that are clearly failing.
I have more to say on the subject of Steven Spielberg and the year of 1997, but I think I'll save it for the Lost World episode.
Okay. Fair enough. Well, I'll let you go first, because I let the cat out of the bag when it came to ranking.
I think there's too much wrong with The Lost World to call it a good movie.
Okay.
It's middling.
Depends what you mean by good. It is middling. But that's the average.
But there are...
Like the...
There are things that are great in it.
Yeah, there really are. It kind of, I think, I want to say it averages out as a good movie. we're back to Star Trek, the Star Trek movie series. You know what averages out to a good series? Star Trek. That's from Futurama, of course. We don't find any problems with any of those movies,
nope.
Apparently. I just think it, again, high highs and low lows.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I reserve the right to change, especially in conversation with you, about The Lost World. But I'm going to say it's barely a good movie.
Okay. Incorrect.
And that it is a late Steven Spielberg movie that I'm happy to watch.
To watch.
And that I leave thinking.
And fall asleep to, I might add.
That's
what a ringing endorsement.
That's a plus these days. That is the most ringing endorsement that I can think of in my current state of being. Honestly. And as I say, you have a skip button these days, so I got to take that into account as well. But, it's a late Steven Spielberg film where I left thinking that he'd made some overall good choices, and that doesn't happen a lot for his 90s, 2000s, 2010s, 2020s. I don't think I've seen a movie he made in the 2020s, but I think, yeah. It's sloppy, but I like it.
It's right in that kind of Phantom Menace wheelhouse.
No,
like
it's not.
Prequel trilogy wheelhouse for you, I think.
Possibly. I mean, if you want to take a broader overview, yes, of course. But
yeah.
I don't know. I was, before going into these two movies, I was ready to sort of laugh it out of the room. And I found myself overall respecting it.
Okay. I have a fair amount of disrespect.
I know.
For a lot of that movie.
Yeah, sure. And I totally see where that comes from. And like I say, I reserve the right to change my mind, you know, if you can illustrate any of that in ways I haven't thought about.
Tall order.
It's not a tall order, actually, because I don't think
anybody thinks about film more than you.
When it comes to Spielberg, you know, I like this. We've said this before. I like the superficial side of Spielberg more than I like.
Sure.
The attempts at worthiness. So that's already given this movie a pass, really. It's like,
yeah, that's
because
true.
Because it's frothy subject matter, I'm already more invested than I would be if this topic was slavery, right? I would just be like, oh, I'm out. So that's a big part of it. But you've got more skin in the game where you can be like, look, this guy at his best, this is a poor imitation of his best.
That will be part of my argument for sure.
In the words of Frank Costanza, this guy, this is not my kind of guy. That's two Seinfeld references on this episode. And
all
there
right.
will be more.
What about Jurassic Park //?
We can call it three from now on. I realize how tedious it is to keep referring to it as that. Sorry.
Thank you.
have I got to go first here?
Sure. Why not?
Yeah, I think you're going to call it a good movie, and I think I will too.
Yeah, To be honest, I have struggled. Because...
I struggle, yeah.
I poo-pooed that movie the first time I saw it, which of course I saw in theaters.
You used to be so miserable and you're so not now. What happened?
I I'm still miserable.
I feel like I've gone in the other direction.
How dare you? I'm more miserable than I've ever been. Thank you very much.
It doesn't seem that way at all. You give everything a fair shake.
But
in this horrible period of movie making we're living through, you give everything a fair shake.
At the time when I first saw that movie, it was really hard to shake the things that I thought were bad in it. Were comically bad, but they're also fleeting. They're just individual moments.
Joe Johnston doesn't give you time to think about.
He's moving on. And when I strip the movie away from those things, and we'll talk about them when we get there.
Yeah,
this is a pretty workmanlike.
Yeah,
consistent, fairly consistent. Certainly. Taught, you know,
yeah, or it is,
you know, it's a, I'm kind of like on the Sam Neill train. It's a pretty good little movie. It's fine. And when I think it's barely good enough to be good. Yeah.
It when you see the running time, given what we know about sequels getting shorter. It's an immediate red flag, right? And when you see us, like, we've gone from, what, 211 to
134.
And I'm just like, and you know at least 7 minutes of that's going to be credits as well. So you're less, actually under 90 minutes, really, in real terms.
Mm-hmm.
And, but I got to tell you, like, coming out of Jurassic Park 3 going, you know, that could have been a bit longer.
Yeah, right.
And then I'm like, Joe Johnston, you've done it again.
Yeah, totally.
you made me leave a movie wanting more. You literally left me wanting more. What more can I ask?
Well done, sir.
So every movie should underperform when it comes to running time.
Yeah.
You should just be, even if you have to cut off the end of the movie.
Which they clearly did. I can't wait to get to it.
You think?
I don't know. It seems to me like somebody said, all right, so what are we shooting tomorrow? Like, because famously they were always kind of reworking the script as they were filming this movie. And so
they knew pterodactyls would be involved, like Tom Skerritt and Poltergeist 3.
Yeah, you know, to me, I don't know if I should save this or not, but I'll go ahead and say it. To me, it sounded like somebody in the room said, all right, they run out onto the beach and...
Well, there's only one answer in a Spielberg-produced movie.
And somebody said, I don't know, the army's on the beach and they're saved. And they're like, holy shit, we could be done filming tomorrow.
But then you know? The Lost World pulls exactly the same shit.
Yeah.
And so does, for that matter, Temple of Doom. And, you know... That's because all the movies that Spielberg and his contemporaries grew up with ended with military intervention.
Sure.
Westerns, you know, war movies. That was how movies ended back in the day.
Those movies still have, you know, you still have a bridge scene like before, you know.
Well, this Jurassic Park 3's got a bridge scene.
True.
Don't tell me it's a birdcage, it's a bridge.
All right. Let's not keep going down the road.
We got plenty of time. I mean, I think The Lost World has more problems in that respect. But one of the reasons I agree. Preferred Lost World is Spielberg saw that coming, saw that this movie was winding down to an unsatisfying conclusion, and he went, you know what? Scratch that, flip it. We're going to make the best bit of the movie. And that obviously that shows the power that Spielberg had at that time, that he could turn to so many different facets of the people making the film and go, we're just going to make it up as we go along.
All right. There you have it. You're good then, and I'm bad good.
Yeah, it sounds like 1984 newspeak, but nonetheless, Yeah, I think both of them are good, and I think Lost World has the edge.
You're incorrect, because one's not so good, one's, you know, good enough to be good.
Oh yeah, we're burying the lead here, which is that you said Jurassic Park 3 is good, which apparently is a controversial statement.
Yeah, but yeah. And then, yeah, Jurassic Park 3 I have at the top. So I guess the only question left is, what do you think, everybody? Mm-hmm. Where do you stand on the Jurassic Park series? So you're going to have to find us on Facebook, find us on Instagram. Of course, don't find us anywhere else. Send a letter to the government stopping Elon Musk.
He's a real John Hammond, isn't he?
Yes.
Actually, he's more like the nephew.
It's another problem with the Lost World. I'll get there. But go ahead and send an email to everythingsequel@gmail.com.
Clearly not a Full Metal Jacket fan.
When you hear us next, we will be talking The Lost World, Jurassic Park. Another problem. Don't even know how to title your movie. We'll be back. Get that little jab in right at the end, Tom. All right. Thanks for listening. We'll be back, everybody.
Does anyone have a question that doesn't relate to Jurassic Park? I do like that scene, if only because it's Sam Neill essentially playing himself at a convention.
Oh, I love everything about him saying, or the incident in San Diego, which I was not present for.
I was not witness.
I was not a
but
witness
also,
to, rather, yeah.
I don't know which came first, but it also reminded me of the Simpsons episode with George Bush having to go to the business meeting with the Afro wig, the multicolored Afro wig. And any questions that everyone puts their hands up, bearing in mind I already explained
about the hair.
And everybody's hands go down. It's exactly what happens here.
Yeah. All right, everybody. We'll be back.
I like to think I know something about beer, but nowadays even I get overwhelmed when confronted by the exhaustive selection of craft beers they have at bars, breweries, and even grocery stores. Back in the day you had one, maybe two craft beers to choose from, and if you were confused, you ordered a Guinness. But in beer-stinations like San Diego, the craft beer options lately are in double, sometimes even triple, digits. So what's a beer drinker to do? You need what I need, the Vegas Beer Guys. Your beer of choice should be a perfect blend of malt and hops. And so a live show about beer needs that same balance. And the Vegas Beer Guys matches beer expert Dan Aker with self-proclaimed beer novice Stephen J. Weiss. The results are eminently drinkable. They're on Facebook. They're on Instagram. They'll try new beers. They'll tell you about beer. Think of them as your beer Sherpas guiding you up a foamy-headed mountain to reach the peak of your pint. God, I need a beer.